Blog Talk Radio. On behalf of Omi Inca's Man 2 production, we'd like to thank you for traveling on the journey with her and the journey of the class agent. We'd like to also invite you to participate and partake of the healing process of consuming the poetry which was intended for healing women in recovery. We also like to invite you to also tune in for future poems that have been written for the sole purpose of women in recovery. Once again, thank you for tuning in, and may you find your destiny as Sherelle seeks to find her destiny.
Welcome, Alafia. Greetings. You're in the Care to Read room. That's right, where you should be. I'm glad you can join us this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, we are acknowledging and celebrating the National Poetry Month. This will be a celebration throughout the whole entire month. So sit back and get ready for the poetry, the narratives, the short story, and the folklore. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, I said folklore. You will be anticipating talking and listening to folklore. Ladies and gentlemen, I am your host for the evening. I am Omi Inca. I write poetry, and I have been featuring my poetry on this show. I will be featuring two of my poems this evening, and this particular session is for the middle schoolers and high school students. We will be speaking specifically to them, so it's okay, parents, to have them in the room to listen. However, this is also intended for the family. This is a family hour to talk about poetry. And today's segment, ladies and gentlemen, I told you that we were going to put Nikki Giovanni off, and yesterday I read you something from Maya Angelou's work, and today we're doing Nikki Giovanni's. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. This is going to be Nikki Giovanni's, and some of her material that I wanted to get for you specifically for children, I had to place on order. So I did manage to get one of her collections, and we'll hear that today. So for you children, please come in the room, sit down. If you want to lock that number in, and parents, if you want to call me, go right ahead and call me at 646-478-0270. And this evening's segment, we're going to be reading from our African Literature Heritage book. And we have a segment that we have selected ahead of time for you that's written by Alice Walker for my sister Molly, who is in the 50s. We're going to read that poem. Well, we're going to give you some insights. We're not going to read the poem to you because our main interest is getting you to read. So we're going to intrigue you with questions and answers and giving you parts of the poem. Now, if you went out yesterday, you might have went out and got that book from me and read a little bit about the book that we presented to you about Raymond's Run yesterday. Now, today, I'm going to ask you to also find that piece by Alice Walker. How many of you recognize Alice Walker and have read any of her materials and are familiar with her materials? Raise both hands. Now, I know some of you are probably thinking about the same play and the narrative of the version, and you probably already know it's on the tip of your tongue. I bet it is. The Color Purple. That's right, The Color Purple. And if you've watched it once, you've watched it twice. And I love the stage scene, and I play the music all the time. It is one of my favorite. Now, Alice Walker specializes in writing for African Americans. That is her specialty. She writes poetry, and she writes plays. Now that you know a little bit about her, I'm going to ask you to read her biography and learn a little bit more about the style and the type of venues that she visits. And tell me about it next time we talk. Now, right now, I'm going to tell you that one of her collection, her poems are about revolutionaries and lovers, about the loss of companion, trust, and ability to expand in love that marks the end of hopeful strategies. And whether or not love is a revolutionary thing or not, she presents it. They are also about those new embattled souls who remind painful commitments of what they have to commit to. She talks about so many things, and she focuses in on so many topics. We'll be focusing in on the autobiographical poems that she's written. And this particular one for my sister Molly, who is in the 50s, we're going to be focusing in on. And if you just stay tuned and keep it right there, keep it right there and hold tight. We're going to put you in the atmosphere and we'll be right back at you in a moment. Stay tuned. I'd like for you to hear The Real Soldier. And this is written by yours truly, Omi, The Real Soldier.
A Real Soldier, read by the author Omika Bidiako Garth. Didn't come here to put on your gear, aligning myself with soldiers standing in fear. I'm not just rapping, for I'm real sincere. This time was reserved for those who could persevere. You got a real soldier. I thought I had told you that you got a real soldier. And that no weapons formed against me, no weapons formed against me shall prosper. So lay down your arms, you imposters. This is for all you detailed characters in disguise. No longer will you be able to reprise. Didn't come here to win your medal prize. I'm on a mission. That's what you really despise. You've got a real soldier. I thought I told you that you got a real soldier. And that no weapon formed against me, no weapon formed against me, shall prosper. So lay down your arms, you imposters. I took a job on tour overseas to only discover that my family and I now would be under siege. I'm behind enemy lines, fighting in a war that's not even mine. I aim to stand my ground like the Board of Education versus Brown. You've got a real soldier. I thought I had told you that you got a real soldier. And that no weapon formed against me shall prosper. So lay down your arms, you imposters. So it was your plan to inseminate false evidence to incriminate, which only led you to discriminate. Was it the scholar in me that caused you to hate, forcing you to enter into this fatal debate? Didn't you think that you could actually succeed to execute your own laws that you wouldn't even heed? You got a real soldier. I thought I had told you that you got a real soldier. And that no weapon formed against me, no weapon formed against me shall prosper. So lay down your arms, you imposter. While looking back in retrospective, you never should have challenged the queen of intellectual. Why didn't you know that I was sent from the green light of the benevolent? I'm battling you right here on your own land in the Netherlands. Why, the very cries of the people, they summons me here. They have a mighty warrior, void of all fear. Why, my very words are charged with energy and ordered not to return unto me void, but to accomplish that which is intended. And to your very ways you have amended. I'm a soldier. I thought I had told you that I'm a soldier and that no weapon formed against me shall prosper. So lay down your arms, you imposter. Refuse to take your brand. Instead, I took a stand. Now watch me enter into a divine man. Attempted cultural genocide. I wonder, will the courts override, or will this be a case for the media to decide? Wait! Hold up! Didn't I tell you? I was a born strategist. While you're dealing with one of the baddest practitioners, born of a sign of fire, why I entered this world with water surrounding me, having the whole host of heaven on my side. Therefore, I will not be reprised. Why I was born in the year of Mayat, which embodies the doctrine of divinity of law and order. I'll weigh your heart against the double halls of truth and justice, and the rule a standard against you. I'll measure your deeds against the cubic two. Then I'll throw the papyrus scepter book at you. By now, you should know who I am. By now, you should know who I am. I'm a real soldier. I'm more than a conqueror.
Ladies and gentlemen, that poem was written overseas for the military soldiers in effort to help them fight back. It was given to me subliminally through meditation. It was an ammunition that I used with my words to help fight with the soldiers overseas. It was very powerful and still is very powerful. Notice that it speaks from a third-person party. And it's powerful. Words are powerful, ladies and gentlemen. And we aim to use words today to respond to the mood and emotion expressed in the poems that we're going to read today, to recognize characteristics and the differentiation between poetry and poise, and to gain experience with some kind of poetic license. That's right, I'm going to deputize you and give you a license to dissect and to give critiquing to these poems. To appreciate, I want you to appreciate and imagine and use your imagination and your sensory use of language. We're going to write in our journals. Keep a journal, ladies and gentlemen. Write down whatever comes to you. Now, I know some of you say, well, I write rhymes and that's poetry. All poetry doesn't have to rhyme. You're going to notice that in some of Alice Walker poems, you're going to notice that some lines are shorter than the other, and you're going to also notice that there's a space left in between the words and certain lines. And you're going to notice that this poet capitalized letters throughout. And what are those used for? Those are very important things, ladies and gentlemen. And we're going to aim at to demonstrate the ability to read poetry out loud. That's why poetry has to be heard. It has to be read out loud so that people can respond to the sounds and the sensories. We're teaching you to critique, to be able to decipher and compare, contrast. These are all the things that your English teacher has told you about, I'm sure. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to pause for a minute because I've made a commitment to acknowledge our ancestors, and we want to do that quite briskly. So if you will stop and stand to your feet, we are now ready to pour our libation, and I am going to prepare the libation to pour libation to my father's side of the family. To pour libation to my father's side of the family, I say Ashe. I pour libation to my mother's side of the family. I say Ashe. I pour libations to the north. I pour libations to the south. Don't forget to say Ashe. I pour libations to the east. I pour libations to the west. And I wash my face with the water. And the water also hits the ground, ladies and gentlemen. I don't want to greet my ancestors with a stale face, so I pour the water and I cleanse my hands and my face. Thank you, my assistant. Am I purified?
Yes, you're purified.
Thank you. That's my elder assisting me today. Ladies and gentlemen, you want to remember to light a candle for your mother's side of the spirit. And I light a candle for my father's side of the spirit. And I say Ashe. And this candle is lit to light the way for them so that they can see their way home. I call on Clara McJenkins, Robert Jenkins, and I say Ashe. Tommy Pete Harvey, Ashe. Eugene Lilly, Ashe. And I call on Mary Lou Hawkins, Ashe. I call on Robert Jr. Jenkins, Ashe. I call Lucille Day, Ashe. Louise Lord, Ashe. Tom Harvey, Ashe. Michelle Harvey, Ashe. George Lilly, Ashe. George Lilly, Ashe. And I say, also I say, Tommy Pete Harvey, Ashe. And I say, so be it, so let it be done. Acknowledging my ancestors, I give homage to them today, to Ola Dulamaray, to Ola Room, to Oromala, and to Ori. My Ori is who stays with me, who's on my head. He is the God that can never leave me. If I am to have good success, I am to acknowledge my Ori. You ought to acknowledge your Ori today, and acknowledge your Ori because your Ori gives you the ability to get riches and to advance yourself. yourself. Ladies and gentlemen, we do this in honor of our ancestors whose backs we stand on while they're bent. We ask our ancestors to guide their way home, to connect with us, because we know that energy never dies, and we know that we believe in reincarnation. So our ancestors will always be with us to lead and to guide us and to send us on our way. We acknowledge our ancestors, we bring them in, their spirit into being, and we say ashe to them, and thank you for letting us ride your backs. Thank you for passing a baton to us, ancestors, and thank you for allowing us to acknowledge you and remember that you can never die. Ladies and gentlemen, do this in remembrance of your ancestors. What I do here today is primarily an example of what I'm asking you to follow. Don't forget to be humble enough to fall to your knees, break to your knees, and hasten to the throne to ask for what it is your heart desire. And remember that ye are God, little children, and ye have overcome them. Therefore, you have the Spirit of God. You have the ability to say things and call things into being. As we call things into being now, I ask for you to call all those things into being that we have brought here together today. And as you call those things into being, remember that you are not alone. That's why you summons the ancestors. You summons them to help your prayers, to open up every door, so that you can begin to start utilizing their strength. You are not able to do anything in your own strength. Remember that. As you call on your ancestors, ask them to aid you and assist them. They are your guardian angels. They have a vested interest in you. They know the reason why you are still here. The sum total of why you came is why they left their spirit and ashe behind for us. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's get right into our story. I have a few questions to ask you, and I want you to remember to at all times to recite your prayers and remember them. And I want to also recite our African pledge here today. And I want to know if my assistant is still in the house. Do I still have an assistant in the house today? Yes, I do. Here's to this flag of mine, the red, black, and green. Hopes in this future bright Africa has seen. Here's to the red of it. Great nations shall know of it in time to come. Red blood shall flow of it. Historians shall write of it. Creator of the great flag of mine. Here's to the black of it. 400 million back of it. Whose destinies depend on it. The red, black, and green of it. Old flag of mine. Here's to the green of it, young men shall dream of it, face shot and shelled of it, maidens shall sing of it, waving so high. Here's to the whole of it, colors brought and pole of it, pleased in my soul with it, irregardless of what is told of it, now thanks to God for giving it, the great flag of mine. Ladies and gentlemen, we want to remind you that it is important that we acknowledge our ancestors and we acknowledge all other things in our family that are brought to us with a ritual. I'd like to go on and talk about Alice Walker's story. I hope that you can go out and get a copy of this story or this poem and be able to look at some of the things that we're going to point out. And I'd like to motivate you by encouraging you to say that you know poetry. You know rhyming, you know rhythm. When you sing, you have that in you. It's systemically been placed there. And if you look at it and if you had to sum up one sentence, a story is really one sentence telling the story. And in your poetry, it also tells a story. You don't always have to make the poem rhyme. You can tell epics, okay? And I want you to remember that. We're going to address the different levels of your ability. I know that all your levels are not the same. We've been used to dealing with the multiplicity of age groups. And in the old schoolhouse, many people were taught at the same time. So that's how we're going to have to attempt to teach you. And there, in this story, in this poem, they talk about a fairy rooster. And Molly made the fairy monster with the vegetables. She took the various different vegetables and she created something from nothing. And she used different colors and shapes to identify this particular fairy rooster. Okay? If you look at when you look at your poem, you'll see that Molly corrected the children in error in their English. She wanted to let them know when they had made a mistake. She taught them the songs and stories. And in this story, how did Molly entertain the children? What did she do? Did she use the food to show them how to make this rooster? And did she also read to them? So when you get the story, you'll see exactly what she did. And she created a lot of things out of the food. Now, in this poem, the narrator talks about an older sister who changes her life. And you're going to be able to find out who that is and how Molly awakened the children's imagination. You have to have imagination, children, in order to be able to learn. You have to be creative. What she did was she showed them how to make a fairy monster by using the mashed potatoes for the body and the green onion for the tail, the carrot sticks for his long legs, and a tomato slice for his crown. She answered their questions as much as equally as she could and taught them songs and told them stories and read to them. Now, how does she teach the narrator to love both African and African-American heritage? Now, you know, our African-American heritage is different from our African tradition, but you must teach children to love both of them. What she did was she taught her songs of Africa and also read to her children the well-known English and American stories. How did Molly encourage the narrator to develop their minds? What did she do? Well, she taught these people to love books and encourage them to grow their and develop their love for writing letters. And she sent money to them for college. She did that. She went out of her way. And what does the phrase tied and twisted tongue mean? That's over in line 8 through 81. In that line, it tells you about the narrator. She may have been shy or awkward, and her tongue got tied up and twisted, like someone gets their words backwards. What change is indicated in this line? When you look at it, I want you to look at line 82 through 84. What change is indicated? These are some of the changes I saw. These lines suggested that the narrator was rebelling against her poverty. She didn't want to be poor, against going barefooted and laboring in the cotton fields. She didn't want to have anything to do with it. She wanted to separate herself from poverty. In this story, Molly is associated with light. Why is Molly associated with light? And what does the image of bright and blinding light indicate in line 85 to 87. When I read that part, it told me, it said something to me. It would probably tell you about her as well. The image of the light suggested to me knowledge, inspiration, and enlightenment, and brilliance, meaning that there was intelligence standing there through the light. And I want you to compare this image with that of the family. Okay, with the family groping after the light, just getting close to the light in line 91 through 101. The contrast is what I want you to look for. What is that contrast intended for? Let me give you some suggestion. It could mean the image suggesting that the family members are helpless to find their way out of the darkness. They had no way of doing it alone into the light because of their poverty-stricken belief. Now, you know, poverty is a mental thing. If you think yourself to be rich and affluently abundant, no one can ever make you poor. But no matter how many monetary things you gain, if in your mind you think you're poor, then guess what? You will always be poor. Now, look, when you get this particular poem, I want you to look at the spaces that appear. Remember I talked to you about spaces that Alice works with, and she puts spaces in a poem. The spaces in line 38 and elsewhere, do these spaces suggest a gap between Molly and her family? That's what I want you to look for. Now, let me give you a clue. Students' opinion is very important to me, and your opinions vary, but here's my opinion. do they suggest some kind of separation between the family? Or do they express a break in thought or pause, perhaps? I think they do. The break in the line gives you the ability to rest, stop, and think about it. That's what I think. And your answers, I know, will vary once again. And what do the spaces in line 77 through 78 represent? I'll tell you what they represent. I believe these spaces suggest the narrator's longing, stretching, and intellectual growth. I think that's what it means. At least the reader is supposed to suggest that. Now, as we go on, why do you think Molly left the family? Why did she get up and say, "That's it, I'm out of here"? In the poem, I want you to be able to tell me, but I'll give you a little hint. Student, you may suggest all kinds of explanation, but I thought she felt she was grown up and had nothing left to give to the family and needed to find her own way. That's my opinion. Now, the literary elements of this, I want you to analyze the imagery. What is imagery? What is imagery, you ask? Okay. I know you're going to discuss this among your friends, but I want you to look at Molly's theory rooster. What kind of image did she create for herself? A caring, a loving one? What kind of image did she create? Didn't she encourage the children? Didn't she encourage them to use what they had, to create from within? So develop an image of her. She was encouraging. She was delightful. And she was a go-getter. The image associated with Molly's summer vacation are the heat of the summer and their bright flowers that she talked about, the domestic images of dresses and braiding hair, and these are some of the things that gives her image. Imagine associated with Christmas, holidays, and all of these things. I want you to look at her and come up with an image for yourself. Now, you will want to write in your journal. You will want to write notes there to tell you a little bit about this poem. And poets have written about all kinds of unlikely suggestions, like manholes, covered jars, freeways, and the likes of it. Now, I want you to understand that your poetry can be about anything that pertains to your life. In order to write poetry, you have to write from your own perspective. And you have to write things that are near and dear to you. I write about people and family, and I write about conditions and situations. And here are some guidelines for you to follow. Okay, first you gather your ideas and start with an impression, ladies and gentlemen. You definitely want to do that, students, and try to think in an image as you write down your ideas. Remember to do that. And use these notes to write a draft. You have to write a draft of your poem. Use language that appeals to your senses, things that make you tickle and laugh, things that are funny and helpful. Then elevate your work. Now, when I say elevate your work, I mean evaluate your own work. Make judgment on it. And you need to choose some topic first. Have you chosen the best image for your poem? What kind of image would you like to portray? Are they specific images that you want to portray? If you have decided to use rhyme throughout the poem. Have you set up a pattern? You remember the count of two, one, two, one, two, one, two, three, one, two, three. Find a pattern that you're going to use in your poem. Remember the spaces, the pauses, the blanks, and then there's capital letters when you want to yell out at someone and speak loud. You make your letters big to speak out. Now, as a poet, I tend to write epics, and when I write epics, they become long stories. They don't rhyme at all, but every now and then I throw a rhyme in, but my main thrust is to get that one sentence out of the story that I'm trying to tell, and I put a hook on it. So you might want to put a hook on it, boys and girls, or ladies and gentlemen. Okay, now, what I've told you so far is how to take the puzzle and put together a good story. Molly's story will be intriguing for you. Alice Walker has a lot of imagery. She uses a lot of pauses, blank spaces, and capital letters. Remember that her standard is one type of poetry, but there are many types of poetry out there, and the other one is the rhyming. Now, I think I've collectively given you as much as I can on the story for my sister Molly, who's in her 50s. I'd like for you to go and get that story. Take some time out and go to the library, request it. Give the librarian the name of the author, Alice Walker. Ask her to preserve the book for you. Go over and read it and come back and let's talk about it. You don't have very much time, so you want to get over there. Now I'd like to play a scene from you, for you, in pertaining to Nikki Giovanni, like I promised I would. And I also want you to understand Nikki Giovanni is a very famous artist. She's a revolutionary. She fights for causes all the time. Now, I'd like for you to listen to some of her poems. You give me your opinion about what you think about Nikki Giovanni. I think she's fantastic. She's one of my favorites.
The African-American Audio Experiment, including Black Boy by Richard Wright, A Raisin in the Sun by Lorraine Hansberry, selections from the Nikki Giovanni Poetry Collection, selections from the Tall Tales chapter of Every Tongue Got to Confess by Zora Neale Hurston, three poems by Gwendolyn Brooks, and selections from Langston Hughes Reads. Hello, I'm Nikki Giovanni, the storyteller's silence. There must have been a silence, not a moan, not a mumbling word, but a silence. The shock, the absolute disbelief, the incredible, stunning, astonishing, gaping shame at capture, the incomprehensible knowledge that the sun stood still, the stars extinguished their twinkles, the winds and the rains fled underground. The moon withdrew its comforting glow. Not only the silence of different languages, different images, different words for the same objects, the holocaustic silence of the unthinkable now made manifest. The captured did not understand their captors, nor each other. They only understood the chains, the whips, the desecrations, the destructions, the horror. Yet that should not, could not, have been the reason for silence. Maybe there was nothing more to say. The long lines on the trips to the coast, the babies crying, then being thrown into the bush or run through with a bayonet, the mothers screaming and fighting back and being murdered also, the animals that lived by the trail of the slavers grew used to everything coming easy, grew expectant and fat and lazy, grew more evil in their own imaginations, grew impossible to live with themselves, anyone else, grew crazy in the trade of human flesh and human souls, prayed at the river, tithed to the church, searched their Bible, and still went in the night to the captured, and still sought relief and understanding, and still tried to justify. Someone had to look to remember. The screaming commands, the cracking whips, the kicking boots indicating time to go to the big ships, to be brave and strong, to find a way to stay human. Some will jump, and some will expire. Some will kill their captors, and some will escape. But most will find themselves on an auction block, being intruded upon, being violated, being branded and corralled. But the spirit stayed, and the heart remembered. They were silent because there were no words to express it. The salt of the tears, the salt of the blood, the salt in the wounds, all knew. It cannot be unusual that the slaves left no written records. They were denied rudimentary materials, but they sang a song, and they preached a service, and their story was codified and sanctified and passed along, and the second voice of the people ripped from Africa, whipped into the new world, molded on the plantations, came from their feet. The feet spoke clearly when they ran away, And they ran away and away and away so much that the South had to make America safe for slavery by passing the Fugitive Slave Law, which would not have been needed if the slaves had not spoken so loudly. Through Gabriel Prowser, through Denmark Vesey, through Nat Turner, through the Underground Railroad, they spoke so loudly, a man in Nebraska who wanted his sons to be free men heard them, prayed about it, took his sons, and led the charge against Harper's Ferry, against the corrupt federal government, against his own white skin, and started the war that freed the slaves, that offered to free America if America hadn't been too venal, too stupid, too arrogant to understand what a gift John Brown offered. It is not unusual that so few found a way. It is unusual that so many did. And out of the hearts and hopes, out of the souls and salvation, the words tumbled, the words ran to the riverside, shouted from the mountains, wove themselves into blankets, wrapped themselves in gay lays, whispered in the night a freedom song, a brave and wondrous story, not of survival, but triumph. Through thunder and fire, through gentle rain, through heavy, violent winds, through magnolia breezes, the Americans who were once captured and enslaved, the Americans who were once considered a little less than chattel, the Americans who didn't want to come and were not happy to be here, now became not the voice of the slaves, but the voice of America. It is not nearly so unusual that the printed word is spoken, but that the spoken word is printed, stamped, paginated, made available to the world to tell the story of a person, of a people, of the undeniable will to prevail. So we come to these voices, to Zora Neale Hurston, to Langston Hughes, to Richard Wright, to Gwendolyn Brooks, to Lorraine Hansberry, to all of us who are, in the mighty words of Martin Luther King Jr., free at last, free at last, free to break our silence, free to tell our story, free to love and laugh. Black Book.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've enjoyed that rendition from Nikki Giovanni herself, one of my favorites. I hope she will become one of your favorites, too. And you listening audience, boys and girls, if you're around, Nikki Giovanni is one of the most revolutionary, outspoken people that I know. Not to deter you from understanding your history, but you must also find your selective poets that you like, Langston Hughes, Nikki Giovanni, Maya Angelou, and also Zora Neale Hurston, my favorite. We'll be back at you tomorrow in the atmosphere, ladies and gentlemen. I have one more poem to give you, and that is the Blackfoot Indian. Born of the Blackfoot Indian that I wrote, test it out. Give me your critiquing and tell me how you like this one.
A Chief and Not an Indian, read by the author Omika Garth. Born of the Blackfoot Indian tribe, one of the real reasons why I still survive, to those with opinions who wonder why I choose to be a chief and not an Indian, for I'm tribal, you see. My destiny was soon to be foretold, of the prophecy to be unfold, of a leader to come, and a real gift, even to some, raised around the circle of the tree of life, with a dream catcher used as a device. This is why I choose to be a chief and not an Indian. It was a vision of a leader to come and a real gift, even to some. With a child at the center of the family's link, this was one of the tools used to keep a leader in sync. Raised in a tribe of 18 with 8 chiefs and 10 Indians, and if you're wondering where the 8th chief arrived, it's no real surprise, for I'm the real leader of the pack, with all 10 Indians who got my back. This is why I choose to be a chief and not an Indian. It was a vision of a leader to come and a real gift even to some. While Mama made her transition when I was just 2, there was nothing left for me to do but to lead my people into the underground steeple. Why, one of the traits of a real chief is to take charge against those who would barge. By consulting the oracles for spiritual instructions in order to avoid chaos and disruption. Like gods and goddesses, they do this. Like kings and queens, they do too. Like priests and priestesses, they all do it too. Cast lots to determine their spots. This is why I choose to be a chief and not an Indian. It was a vision of a leader to come and a real gift even to some. You see, a chief knows their place. So back up and get out of my space. Don't try playing me for no Indian, acting like you're smoking on the peace pipe of indigo. I'm calling you out like a real chief. I aim to take back what was mine, you thief. Oh, and if you're still wondering why I choose to be a chief and not an Indian, just check the history books. Why, it's no real mystery. For centuries, you have desecrated our land, forfeited God's plan for man, called us out of our name, left us feeling shame, stole our language, then pushed us into anguish, attempted to render us mute. That's when we had to hit you with a suit. Took us to a level of deprivation, which led us to call for reparations. You stole from a chief, you dirty thief. Now I'm going to leave you in your grief.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank you for going all the way with the OMI, and our time is up here, and we'd like to encourage you to come back tomorrow, same time, same place.
A Real Soldier, read by the author, OMI.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to exit out of here, and we, with your permission, we'll be back at you in the atmosphere tomorrow, so please do join us.
On behalf of OMI Inca's Man 2 production, we'd like to thank you for traveling on the journey with her. In the journey of the class agent, we'd like to also invite you to participate and partake of the healing process of consuming the poetry which was intended for healing women in recovery. We also like to invite you to also tune in for future poems that have been written for the sole purpose of women in recovery. Once again, thank you for tuning in. And may you find your destiny as Sherelle seeks to find her destiny.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be reading The Revolt of the Evil Fairy tomorrow by Ted Poston. Look that poem up and come in ready to discuss it. And we say on that note, old double and baba booey to you, y'all. Good evening.